Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Creative Wealth Simplified podcast, the podcast that empowers you to take control of your financial future, diversify your income, and achieve the financial freedom you deserve. So this week, we have special guests. We have Brian Davis from Spark Rental Co-Investing. Brian, how are you today?
Chris, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
It is Friday. We spent 20 minutes pre-podcast talking shop on things and so forth, but we are ready to roll with this episode. And today I brought on Brian, who runs a co-investing, passive investing group, and want to target and speak a lot about that because we've gotten a lot of comments and questions from people really wanting to learn more about passive investing, as well as where to go to get information, because information is so key. Unlike 25 years ago, if you wanted to invest, you'd have to pull out the newspaper and look at the stock ticker. Today, you now have the internet and too many resources. So, Brian, thanks for coming on.
Oh, Chris, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. So let's first start. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've got going on today?
Yeah. So short version, 20 plus years ago, I graduated college, had no idea what I wanted to do, fell into a job by accident with a hard money lender and was doing hard money loans back in the mid-aughts when it was just one giant party in real estate, right? Yep. So I'm watching all these guys make money and I'm like, I can do this too. I'm smarter than these guys. Like, yeah, I'm going to go in. I'm going to start buying properties. So I did, and I made a whole bunch of stupid, avoidable mistakes that just didn't need to be made if I had only gone out and gotten a coach, a mentor, a senior partner, anybody to tell me what I was doing. And fast forward, 2008 was obviously a total disaster for me. I ended up switching careers, but I kept on to a bunch of properties. And in 2015, I moved abroad. I still had most of those properties. And the early ones that I bought, you know, the really bad ones, the ones that I totally messed up with, yeah, I realized when I moved abroad just how much I was subsidizing those properties' returns with my own efforts. And I could no longer do that anymore once I was living halfway around the world in Abu Dhabi. So it just opened my eyes to just how not passive those investment properties were and how not passive that income was for me. You know, even though I had a property manager, you know, I still had to manage the manager. I ended up just getting rid of all of those properties at a certain point. But we had already launched Spark Rental. And one of the things that we do and did at Spark Rental was teach people how to invest in real estate. So that left me feeling kind of out of alignment, right? Like out of integrity when I'm teaching people how to invest in real estate, but I'm not investing in real estate myself anymore. I no longer even own any rental properties at that point. So we started experimenting with going in on investments with some of our students and some of our audience members and with partners around the country, boots on the ground, investing partners. We started with some single family investment properties. And we quickly realized that was way too much work. You know, we were really just doing it as a teaching exercise, right? So we weren't actually making any money from ourselves on these other than the returns on the money that we were putting in ourselves. So we had to scrap that, but we went back to the drawing board. And it was around that time that I had been experimenting with syndication investing just personally. So I went to my partner, Denny, and said, hey, the single family investment properties, yeah, that was too much work to do co-investing with our students. What if we tried doing it with a passive real estate syndication? And she kind of shrugged and said, yeah, sure, let's give it a try with a pilot deal. So we did, and it was great. It was wonderful. it was exactly what we were looking for, where it wasn't a ton of work for us, right? Because it's a totally passive investment, but it's also a good teaching tool. And it's a good way for people to invest small amounts collectively to reach that high minimum investment. So, you know, it's one of the downsides of syndications is the minimum investment is typically 50 grand, 100 grand, sometimes 250 grand, or even $1 million. It makes it hard to diversify. But if you have a whole bunch of people all going in on that together, you can invest $5 grand a person. And while that's not chump change, it's also not 50 or 100 grand, right? Yep. So it makes it a lot easier to dip your toe in the water. It makes it easier to diversify and spread your money across a lot of different deals. So that's what we're doing today. It was originally just something we did with our course students. And now we've opened it up as just a flat fee investment club that anyone can join. We get together every month and we have fun vetting these deals together.
That is awesome. First, I will say from the beginning of what you said, I don't feel too sorry for you that you're living in Abu Dhabi and having issues with your properties. Where were the properties located? Were they back where you grew up or where were the properties located?
Yeah, they were in Baltimore, which is my hometown. It's where I grew up. So we've moved around the world a little bit since then. So we spent 4 years in Abu Dhabi, 4 years in Brasilia. We just moved to Peru last June. We'll be here for at least 2 years total, maybe longer. We'll see.
That is awesome. And again, I don't feel sorry for you on that front. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, I'm just going to jump right into it.
Yeah.
The investment club that you have for Spark Rental. And you mentioned you get together, you do the due diligence together. It sounds like you got people within the club of varying degrees of education, probably some very experienced, some just learning out. So they get to kind of see what else. Can you share some of like the ahas or experiences that you've had when you're vetting some of these deals?
Absolutely. So a couple of points. One, we have found that by investing as a community, as a club, like we get together and we vet these deals together every month as a club. And it's like having 30 different experts all picking apart these deals together, right? It becomes almost a hive mind where we have people who inevitably ask great questions that never would have occurred to me, right? But we all benefit from those great questions. Everyone's coming at these from a different angle, a different perspective, different worldview, different experience level. Like you said, you know, we have some people who have never in real estate before, other people who have invested in dozens of deals, dozens of properties. So I'll give you two really quick examples. One, last year we were vetting a deal in Dallas, and I've never been to Dallas. I don't know anything about Dallas. But we had a woman on the call who lived 5 minutes down the street from this apartment complex. So she was like, guys, I drive past this apartment complex every day in my commute to work. And I can tell you that there is a shortage in this area of housing for young professionals, which is what this apartment community was really serving. So she's like, this is actually a great deal. We never would have known that ground level perspective, right? But because we were vetting these deals as a community, we got that benefit. We have another woman in our club who works in the insurance industry. So every time we bring on a sponsor, she's just grilling the hell out of them about, why did you only forecast 4% rise each year for insurance premiums? And don't you know that it's going to be way more than that? I love that, right? Like, she's an insider in the industry and she knows what's going on and the trends. As we've all seen as real estate investors, it's been an ugly couple of years for insurance premiums. You know, in some cases, we've seen insurance premiums double for commercial properties or go up 50%. I mean, it's crazy. So that's one point. It's just that community aspect of it is way more valuable than we can ever communicate in like our landing pages or our marketing materials, right? There's no way we can capture that in like little 5-bit marketing copy. You just can't. But that is where so much of the value of our investment club comes from, that community element to it. As far as aha moments, we've all gotten a lot better at analyzing risk in these deals as we're bringing in different sponsors every single month and looking at their deals and grilling them, analyzing the deals. So a few standout risks that we really look for, it almost goes without saying there's sponsor risk at the top level, right? Mm-hmm. Because a really smart, experienced, and a high integrity sponsor can salvage of a very flawed deal. And the opposite is true of inexperienced or incompetent or lower integrity, shall we say, sponsor. They can take a pretty solid deal and make it fall apart. So at the top level, there is sponsor risk. So you obviously want to vet sponsors very, very carefully. But when you start drilling down into individual deal risk, So a couple of the high level risks that we really focus on nowadays are property management risk, right? Because if you can take a great deal, you know, a great property bought at a good price, but if you have bad property management, the property is not going to end up cash flowing well because they're going to have too many rent defaults, too many vacancies, turnovers are going to take too long, right? Mm-hmm. So we always ask sponsors, who's going to be managing this property? You know, how long have you worked with them? If it's in-house, you know, how many of these other properties have you managed yourself in this market? What's your experience and track record with these? If it's outsourced to someone else, have you worked with this same property management firm on 20 other deals, for example? Or is this your first time working with this property management firm? So questions like that, analyzing property management risk. Construction risk is another big one. Same thing, you know, if it's in-house construction, how many deals have you done in this market? And what's your track record with these? You know, do you always go over budget? You always blow your timetable? Or do you have a sharp track record of success with these? And likewise, if you're outsourcing it, there's a big difference between outsourcing it to a brand new company you've never worked with before versus we always work with the exact same team. They're great. They've done 15 deals with us and we know them inside and out, right? Those are two different things. And debt risk is, of course, a big one. That's one of those things that a couple of years ago, sponsors just weren't paying enough attention to, right? And I see you grinning. All seeing all these sponsors who went out and they just took out these variable interest, short-term bridge loans, just assuming that rates are going to stay low forever because they had been low for so
rates
long.
Rates and prices will just keep doing this.
You know, exactly. Yep, just up and to the right, into the horizon, right? And of course, history proved them wrong. 2022 and 2023 were a rude awakening for a lot of sponsors and a lot of LPs, right? So what's the debt profile for the deal? Is it, what's the LTV? How long is the debt term? We were looking at a deal last year that had, it was like 2 or 3 year bridge debt. And yes, they were buying an interest rate cap, but still so short term. Yeah, I don't know that it will be a good market for selling or refinancing within the next 2 or 3 years. It might not be, right? We ended up not doing that deal. And the very next deal that we were looking at, the sponsor was assuming previous financing from the seller. It was fixed interest financing at 5.1% with another 9 years remaining on it. So the calculus there is so different, right? Like, sure, I have no idea if it will be a good market for selling within the next 2 years, but within the next 9 years, I'm pretty sure there will be a good moment to sell, right? Like, we're going to be okay at some point in the next 9 years. It's a totally different calculus. And then finally, you know, I'll stop droning on here, but cash flow risk is another one that we've seen. How conservatively are they forecasting things like rent growth, expense growth? You know, there are a lot of markets right now where rents are actually declining.
Costs are going
flat. Up. Yeah, so rents don't always go up. And that being said, historically, it's very rare for rents to go down. This is one of those exceptions, at least in some markets. They're not going down in every market, of course. But even in markets where they're rising, they tend to be rising pretty slowly right now, whereas some expenses have been rising quite sharply. We already talked about insurance. That's a big one. But labor costs, too, have been rising much faster than rents in most markets over the last couple of years. So things like repair costs, maintenance costs, property management costs, if you're outsourcing that, or I mean, even if you're not, even if you have to pay employees, like that is still, those expenses have been rising a lot faster than rents in a lot of markets. So you end up with this pinched cash flow. So lower NOI, lower property valuations. And if you end up with negative cash flow, the deal's in real trouble, right? So all of these sort of high level risks, we're really sensitive to analyzing those risks when we're trying to vet a deal together as a club.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you.
A few things that I resonate with a lot of what you said. First, when you start with the sponsor, think about getting on an airplane. When you get on an airplane, do you want a pilot on their first time flying a plane? Or do you want a pilot who's been flying for 20 years through every storm, every snowstorm, fog, ice storm, lightning, you name it? Same thing with a sponsor. One that's, this is their first deal, which people have to start somewhere. Now, with pilots, there's licensed training and you're probably a little more comfortable even. With funds and syndications, if somebody's got a pocket full of cash, they can go start a syndication. So there's a difference there. But that's the way I like to look at things on a sponsor is think about, because we've had some stormy weather, as you mentioned, the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Those experienced pilots are getting through it. Those who had very little experience may not get through it. The other thing you mentioned that I want to dive a little bit deeper into is you mentioned like the investment club, the person in Dallas or people with certain experience. The thing I've seen a lot in real estate, and maybe this is just me, but there's a lot of real estate investors who have egos who want to do it on their own. You've got one group there. Then on the opposite spectrum, you have another group of people who literally you can walk them to the edge, but they just can't jump because they're jumping alone. And what I love about things like an investment club is, hey, look, it's kind of like I remember in elementary school where you'd all hold the parachute and like hold it up and then run underneath and back up. Hopefully everyone did that. If not, people are like, where'd you go to school? You know, you did it as a team, but within a club, it's like everyone's holding, hey, we're jumping in together. And when you're doing things with other people, typically it gives you a little more sense of security. So that's an interesting thing too, because like I said, there's people on one end of the spectrum who always want to do it themselves. And then there's people who never want to do it. By kind of bringing sometimes those people together, again, opens up much more opportunity is what I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you invest with other people in these and you can invest small amounts in each deal, so that opens up so much more that you can do. So diversification is one of our core values as a club. And we mean that in every sense of the word. So geographic diversification, right? Like many different cities and markets and states. Sponsor diversification, you know, we're trying to bring in a new sponsor every month. Property type diversification, so mobile home parks and multifamily and retail and industrial, storage, all of the above. And when you can spread that money out across so many different types of deals, at the end of the year, it's just numbers on a page as far as how it all performs, right? As opposed to if you're having to put all of that money into one single deal because the minimum investment on a deal is 50 grand, 100 grand, then you're really nervous about how that deal is performing, right? I mean, and if it's going sideways, that's really stressful. Whereas my way of looking at this is just as basically a form of dollar cost averaging, where every month I'm investing another 5 grand in a new deal. And I know that at the end of the year, one or two of those will probably underperform, right? And then one or two of those will probably hit it out of the park and overperform. And most of them will just form this bell curve kind of in the middle. But it's a low stress way of investing because, again, it's all just numbers averaged out on a page at the end of the year rather than this one deal that you put so much money into that it's high stress if that deal doesn't perform as expected.
Yeah, that diversification is a key component because I was talking to somebody this morning and they mentioned they were listening to a podcast where there was a gentleman who has significant money. He's invested in like 20 different syndications, all with like $50,000 minimums. But he said out of the 20, like 18 were multifamily out of the 20. And when you talk about diversification, it's great you're in 20 different offerings, but if they're all the same asset class, that's like investing again in airlines where I'm just buying Delta, American, United, and Spirit or whatever. It's like you're still in that one asset class. So granted, you got diversification, but if that asset class has challenges, then you're going to have challenges, which this person mentioned, 12 out of like the 18 have paused distributions or whatever is going on. Other thing that you mentioned regarding that diversification, and again, this is, I think, a critical component, is most people who are kind of, I'll call it, in the financial industry, when you talk diversification, usually say never put more than like 10 or 15% of your net worth or the money available into one investment. And what's happened over the last several years, really last, I think, decade even, is whether you're an accredited or non-accredited investor, people are taking all the money they have and putting it into one investment. And I've seen people who get the level of accredited and they have, it's a $50,000 min, but they only have 50, and they put it in because they're like, yes, I'm accredited. I can invest in this institutional offering. And then all of a sudden it goes belly up and they're like, uh-oh. Whereas I think a lot of people don't realize. So first, let me define accredited for people who are listening. You don't know. It's a net worth over $1 million or over 200 grand a year in income. Now, the interesting thing, I don't know if you noticed, Brian, those numbers are from like 1982. They haven't changed in 40 years. And the SEC is talking about updating those because this is exactly what's happening is all these syndications, the minimum is getting much higher. And in the past, it's, oh, you're accredited. It's okay for you to lose money. It's kind of, they're out there to protect the everyday consumer. Now, all of a sudden, in some areas, you know, California, Boston, New York, DC, 200 grand a year is really good money, but it's not, there's a lot of people making it, or a couple making 300,000. You know, basically take any county probably around DC, and the average income there is probably very close to hitting that number. Same thing with California. So diversification component is so critical in regards to being able to invest smaller amounts in different offerings. And that's one thing, you know, with our offering that we've always done is, hey, we've got a $5,000 minimum. And I used to always, when you'd post on Bigger Pockets, hey, where can you invest with five grand? I'd always reply, hey, you can invest with me as well. You know,
there you go.
not self-promote, but tell people I know a guy who has the same last name as me that if you click on the link, will bring you to their profile, but I'm not self-promoting. So, no, that's great. So remind me, how long again have you been doing this investment club, and what are, you've given great insights, great nuggets of information. I was going to say, where do you see it going over the next 12 months and next maybe 3 years?
Yeah. So technically we started the club around 4 years ago, but for the first 2 years or so, you know, we were just kind of experimenting with those single family home investments. In our current form of investing in syndications and we're co-investing, going in together on these syndication deals, we've been doing that for about 2 years. So yeah. None of the deals have gone full cycle yet. And I say that there's a note that's about to mature at the end of this month. So we will finally be able to say, oh, you know, if one of these has actually gone full cycle. So yeah, that is kind of where we've been up to this point, where we're going. One of the things that we have started doing just this year is, in addition to getting together every month to vet a deal together and have that deal flow component, we're also getting together once a month for an educational presentation. So we'll bring in some sort of outside expert to present to the club with no sales pitch attached to it, because that's one of the problems with webinars, right? Is that just feel like a giant sales pitch. But people are paying to be a part of this club. We certainly don't want them to feel like pitched to when we bring in experts. So yeah, so we brought in our own CPA last month, for example, to just break down some of the nuances of tax strategies for passive real estate investors. Things like, how does depreciation recapture work? And how can you protect against it? Things that a lot of people find confusing, even if they have been in this space for a little while. So that was fun. We aim to do that sort of thing once a month and add that educational component to it. You talked a minute ago about accredited versus non-accredited. One of our core values historically has always been inclusivity and only featuring deals that allow non-accredited investors. That does limit us in some cases because, you know, a lot of sponsors only work with accredited investors.
Yep.
So we're talking about, as we grow, creating like a sub club within our club of accredited investors and periodically featuring some deals just for those members, in addition to our regular monthly deals for everybody. But I don't think we're quite there yet as far as just size of the club. And then one of our other goals for the club as we expand is getting more of those preferential profit splits by hitting the higher investment minimums. Thresholds. So some of these syndication deals, they'll say, all right, the minimum investment is 50 grand or 100 grand. But if you invest 500 grand, we'll give you this higher preferred return and this better profit split when the property sells. So we've hit that with one of the deals that we've invested in so far. We want to be hitting those with every deal that we invest in, right? So we're getting, our members can invest 5 grand or more and still get the same return splits and the same like higher preferred returns that they would be getting if they were investing 250, 500, you know, whatever the minimum is for those better return splits if they were investing by themselves.
So, and that's one of the benefits of doing that. Again, some of those tribes and these groups, because I see a lot of people, whether now other people, I've seen models of like funds of funds do the same thing where it's like, hey, I bring in 10 people because I want to go hit, you know, it's not the minimum on this, but hey, let me get this extra. It helps everybody. And somebody who's a sponsor, we're not opposed to it at all, because somebody's going to come cut me a $250,000 check, whether it's from one person or 10 people that are part of a group. That's for us, it's cash is cash. So most sponsors should appreciate that. So as we kind of wrap up this episode, I like to ask sometimes kind of a unique story of good lesson learned you have in real estate. And it sounds like maybe you've had some, you know, with your rentals in Baltimore or whatnot. Do you mind just sharing one story that, you know, you shared in the past with people, or just like, man, hope I don't have to go through that again?
Oh, man. Well, yeah. So when I first started investing, and I didn't have a ton of money, I was in my 20s, and I also just didn't know what I was doing. I bought in like D minus class areas in the city because that's what I could afford. And I had this kind of mistaken notion that would give me diversification. And what I didn't realize, and it took a lot of, it was an expensive lesson to learn, that lower income rental properties, it's really a niche skill set that's required to invest in those. And the average person should not be investing in those. And I'll give you a couple vivid reasons why. For one thing, it's really hard to find decent, much less good property managers who are willing to work with you on those properties, because they get paid as a percentage of the rent collected, right? So they get paid less for those properties, but those properties are inevitably 2, 3, 4 times as much work as the B, the A class properties and tenants. So why would property managers work 4 times as hard for half the money? They wouldn't if they have a choice in the matter, right? So the most skilled property managers, they don't work with those properties. And that leaves you with kind of the dregs of property management. A lot of people get mad at me when I say that, but that has been my direct experience. That's lived experience. And it's also been the experience of almost every real estate investor I've talked to who has worked with, you know, very low income rental properties. So these hidden risks that just don't show up on paper when you're calculating returns on some of these lower income rental properties. Crime is another one. I can't tell you how many AC condensers have been just totally ripped apart for the copper tubing inside in some of these areas. And then there's also, so it's not just direct victimization of crime like that, where there's actually people stealing things from your properties. There's also the indirect impact of that, where I've had plenty of good tenants in some of these houses, of course, but a lot of the good tenants will leave because they don't feel safe because the crime is so bad. So there's all these hidden costs that show up with lower rent properties. And it's not necessarily a politically correct thing to say, but it's something that people need to hear if they're thinking about investing their own money in these types of properties. Yeah, I've seen it across the board, higher vacancy rate or higher turnover rates rather. But higher turnovers mean a lot more expenses, because every time there's a turnover, you have to repaint the units and often recarpet the units. And it's just, it's everything. All of these things all add up to making a much more difficult time earning money on some of these properties. So there is a segment of people that can make money off them. They have a true niche skill set that if you're just starting out in real estate, you don't have. So yeah, I would caution novice investors away from lower end rental properties. And again, which is, it's probably too politically incorrect of a lesson to be sharing on this show, but you were asking some of those hard won lessons, and that's one.
Well, I think what it really boils down to is that the margin paper, it's going to look like it's going to cash flow very well, but because a rental payment is so low, one tenant goes in there, causes $4,000 worth of damage, you've just lost basically 7 months of rent, and it took 2 months to do that work and get somebody in there. So you lost a year.
Yep.
I had one outside of in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. It was actually, I had taken back, and I actually liked the outside of the house. And I'm like, nice house, big house, but was not in a good area. Turned it into a rental. and had major issues with the property manager. The tenant wasn't paying. The tenant left in the middle of the winter, left the window open, caused water to pipes to freeze. Property manager's like, yep, good to go, get it rented again. And I spent like $15,000 getting everything rented. And then it's like not renting. And then, you know, I finally had somebody go check it out. And literally, they still had in the ceilings half the drywall missing in certain areas that they literally, they painted everything, basically left it completely open because of where they re-ran the pipe. Same thing in the vertical in the wall. And I'm like, so I call the PM. I'm like, you literally, seriously had somebody go in there, finish paint this unit when the drywall wasn't done. The plumber had to go back and I wanted to get the painter in there. And I'm like, oh my God. So then they tried to charge me after the fact, like $2,000 more. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. If you think, I'm like, go ahead and sue me. Like, you know, and we ended up reaching an agreement where and walked away. But yeah, the lower monthly payment rentals or the lower cost rentals, everybody says they look great on paper, but they don't. And I will tell, if you look at anybody today who's over the age of, let's just say 55, and look where they're living or where they've lived the last 15, 20 years, and if they own a house. Now, most of the places where they own a house, probably most areas would probably never cash flow at any point in time if they're buying it today or when they bought it. But I guarantee you, they got seven-figure equity. And to get that much cash flow, you're never going to get there. Cash flow is nice. You can get rich off cash flow, but you build wealth off equity is what I like to say. So great. Well, thank you for coming on today. And that is going to be a wrap for another episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. So thank you for joining us on the journey to unlock the full potential of your financial future. We hope today's insights have opened your eyes to new possibilities and help you take a step closer to your dream of generative passive income. So, and remember, the path to financial freedom is not a straight line. If you like this episode, make sure to share it, like it on your favorite listening station, or follow us on YouTube. Brian, thanks again, and hope you stay where you're currently located and having wonderful weather. And again, not feeling bad when you're living outside the country, investing in the U.S. Take care,
Chris,
everyone.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show, share with a friend, or subscribe to the show, and leave us a review.